can't decide and torn between a romantic, comedy, action, or an indie film to watch for the weekend? Well, well, well. Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast is your ultimate guide to the latest movies. Join us as we dissect the latest on the blockbusters. It's the Golden State Media Concepts Movie Podcast.
Welcome to the GSMC Movie Podcast, brought to you by GSMC Podcast Network. I'm a new host today, actually. My name is Stacy, and I am here with Sarah.
Hello, I am also a new host, so I'm excited to be on this podcast.
I'm so excited. So today, we are discussing two movies, Black Panther and Murder, on the Orient Express. And we're going to start with Black Panther.
Currently in theaters.
Yes. So I just got to say, Loved this film. And I'm not a big, I don't hate superhero films. Mm-hmm. I've seen a number of the Marvel films. I've seen all of the ones up through, I was about to say Scarlet Witch, and that's a totally different character. Captain America, Winter Soldier, except for the Hulk one, or ones, because, but I saw all the Iron Mans up to then, and the Thors, and Avengers. And then just skipped everything in between that and Black Panther for some reason.
So before we talk more about the movie, do we want to give, I mean, I'm sure people have heard of it. It's everywhere right now. But for those of you who maybe have been living under a rock for the last couple of months, Black Panther is based on Marvel comic books. Mm-hmm. It is different because it has an almost entirely black cast.
Right.
It's kind of a minor character in the Marvel universe, not one that you think of when you think of the Avengers, although if you follow comic book canon,
he does show up later,
but, you know, if you're just kind of a surface comic book character, you maybe haven't heard of Black Panther.
Right.
So Black Panther is the leader of four tribes in Africa, and there's a whole lot of the fifth one doesn't acknowledge him, so he's really only the leader of four.
Yes.
There's a whole lot of backstory about a meteor that falls to Earth that imbues the Earth with certain powers and gives the leader, the Black Panther, certain powers. Mm-hmm. What else do you want to say about Wakanda?
I mean, it's a very interesting thing because it's hidden, so on the outside it looks like, you know, a typical, stereotypical poor African country with just farmers and herders and what have you. And then on the inside, it's this really great technological marvel that most of the world doesn't know about, including their neighbors in Africa.
Almost looks like something you'd see in a, it is a science fiction movie, but in like a space science fiction movie, it reminds me of things that you would see in like Star Trek or those types of things in terms of technology.
Yes. And so, this is it's not an origin story movie the way you would expect the single character Avengers, like Iron Man and Thor and Captain America all had their origin story movies. Black Panther showed up before his origin story movie in, actually, I'm not even sure which one it is because I didn't see it, but he showed up in one of the ones between Captain America, Winter Soldier, and getting his own movie.
I didn't see that either. I've seen many of them. They've been coming out so fast and furious that I've been a little hit and miss. I do like the Marvel universe. I am getting a little bit bogged down in everything. Right. There's a lot of details to keep straight.
Yes.
But like you said, like Wonder Woman appeared.
That's DC.
That's DC. But I'm just saying in terms of origin stories, like Wonder Woman appeared in Batman versus Superman and then had her own movie. So kind of like that, only in the Marvel universe.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So we start off with this. It's a little strange. It starts off sort of going back in time for a bit and then jumps to the modern era where he's about to be crowned king and become the new Black Panther, because I guess that's tied in with being the king of Wakanda.
Which is also interesting in terms of superhero, because it's not just one person, you know, like Iron Man is Tony Stark.
Right.
Captain America is the guy whose name I can't think of. Anyway, usually your superhero is one person. Mm-hmm. This is, it's passed down from through generations.
Well, when I know that
ascend to the kingship.
People who follow comics are probably yelling at us. Actually, lots of those other characters have been passed down with the names, but we won't go into that. We're neither of us really big comic people. But I mean, there was so much buzz about Black Panther that mm-hmm. going into it, I actually was like, I bet I'm not going to like this movie. There is no way it could possibly live up to all this talk. Like, it's the most tweeted about movie ever. And it mm-hmm. had, I think, the biggest pre-sales or something, and the biggest like opening weekend, I think, of any Marvel, like mm-hmm. all this acclaim, and people were saying it's so good. And I was just like,
and it hit $1 billion in like 3 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. And it held the number one spot, you know, for several weeks, even as other movies came out. I was just like, it cannot possibly live up to all, like, I get why we're all talking about it, but it just cannot possibly live up to that. And it really did. I was so amazed and so happy that it really did, because
it didn't for me.
Oh.
I didn't hate it. I didn't love it. I liked mm-hmm. it a lot. I did. And there's certain elements of it that I really loved. Mm-hmm. I didn't love it as a whole. I don't think it's one of the movies that I would want to go back and watch over and over again. And that's partly because, well, I do like comic book superhero movies. I don't tend to watch them over and over again.
Me neither.
There's just a little too much, like, let's go have action scenes that destroy right. half a town or country mm-hmm. in one fell swoop. I loved the women in this movie.
Yes.
I absolutely loved the women in this movie. I love the fact that you had such... there were only like two white people with speaking roles in this movie,
right.
Really? Mm-hmm. You just don't get that very often with a big blockbuster movie having that many people of color in it, which is amazing. I love mm-hmm. that. I just, in terms of superhero, I wasn't... Black Panther, and it will be different as he moves forward into his story. The whole sort of isolationist policy, he wasn't a superhero to me. He's a superhero to his people,
uh-huh.
But he's not a superhero in the sense that I think of superheroes. And so that was a little strange for me. I wasn't to the extent of the bad guy in the movie who wanted what he wanted in terms right. of what they should be doing with their resources, but... Mm-hmm. He wasn't necessarily a superhero to me in this movie.
Well, I think, and again, not familiar with the comics, so I have no idea how, you know, correct this is according to the comic story.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that the whole isolationist thing was sort of social commentary. Mm-hmm. And I thought the movie actually did that very well, because there's a number of times where we get social, including the very last thing is the speech he's giving to the UN or something similar. And that's yes. very, very clear what that's supposed to be.
Yes.
But for most of the film, there's social commentary, but it's done very subtly, and it's mm-hmm. not one character.
Right.
It's multiple characters talking about different things and saying different things. So it's not just one character, you know, expounding, this is what the filmmaker thinks, and now let's move on. But that this keeps coming up and affecting his life and his actions. And I thought that was very interesting. Because, mm-hmm. of course, this film being so historical, the first, you know, Black superhero lead
mm-hmm.
and all that... You almost expected that there would be, you know, social commentary going on in this film.
Right.
It wasn't just going to be a straight, you know, bang, bang, action superhero film.
Mm-hmm.
That it couldn't be, being as historical as it was. But I really liked the way that they managed to weave that in without it being over the top.
Mm-hmm.
I liked the way that they managed to also weave in the exposition without it being over the top. And again, I didn't see where he showed up in... whichever Marvel film it was.
We should have looked at
we really
looked that up. Sorry.
I want to say it's Civil War, Captain America Civil War, but I could be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But I also, I think it was done well with this one in that you didn't actually have to have seen whichever that one is
to
understand this film. You didn't have to have seen really any of the other Marvel films to follow and understand this film. Like, everything was well balanced, including, I really do also love the women and how you were able to, you have several women. It's not just, okay, there's Black Panther and then his female counterpart.
Right.
Like, you do have that with Lupita Nyong'o's character, who's got an interesting backstory with him. But then you also have, what's her name?
Michonne. Michonne. Denai Guinée.
Yes.
I always think of her as Michonne from The Walking Dead. And so even though she has a name in the movie and she's a general in the movie, right. She was Michonne to me because that's what was in my head.
Yeah, I don't even know her name. I just think of her as the general. And then you have Shuri, who is a sister.
I loved her.
She is so wonderful and just sassy. And
she kicks ass in the end, but she also kicks ass throughout the movie with her brain.
Right. She's amazingly smart and has created like all the technology that Wakanda, which is built off of this huge aura vibranium, which mm-hmm. is an interesting name for metal, that all this technology comes from the fact that they have this vibranium and know how to use it, but she's taken it to a whole nother level, mm-hmm. and she's only like supposed to be like 16 or something in the film. But then you also have his mother, who's played by Angela Bassett, mm-hmm. who's the queen and does come off very regally, but at the same time you've got all these really strong women, but it's not and my family and I were talking about this, it's not, oh, the women are strong at the expense of the men, or vice versa.
Right.
Like, there's the scene at the very beginning where he's supposed to be rescuing Lupita Nyong'o's character because she's being taken on a truck with a bunch of women to go somewhere. You can tell by the guys they fight that, you know, wherever these women are going, it's not going to end well for them. So he goes to rescue her, and as he's doing it, she kind of ends up rescuing him.
Yes.
And there's one point right before he's supposed to go where his general tells him, don't freeze. And he's like, I never freeze. And then he sees her and he freezes. And she's like, you know what? I've got this. I'm good. I'm fine. I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
But he, of course, is the Black Panther. He's the king. He's the one with these powers. So he also does, you know, kick a lot of butt in his own.
Yes. Yes, he does. And it's got all the wonderful tech and all those superhero gadgets that we know and love from movies, and that is at from the brain of his sister.
Mm-hmm.
This has nothing to do with the plot. I was just Angela Bassett's character, the queen, and then the queen mother. She's always, of course, very regally, royally mm-hmm. dressed throughout. And then later in the movie, she takes off her headpiece and she's blonde. Yeah. And I was like, wait, what?
Well, I thought she was just, it was white hair that she was that old.
I couldn't tell from mm-hmm. the color. I just, when I first glanced up, I was like, wait, what?
Yeah, I was a little like, oh, okay, all right. But I think it was also, the production is really good on this film. And they were clearly told to just, you know, have fun and explore different things. And mm-hmm. so when you get to Wakanda, which has its 4/5 tribes, and you can, I can't tell you which tribe is sort of referencing which African culture, but you can see there's a difference in them when they get down to the sort of the elders advisory circle that the king has.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the woman from one tribe has her hair done in a certain way, but then the man from the other tribe has the lip disc
mm-hmm.
or whatever, that these are very, you know, referencing a lot of different things in African culture, but that it seemed to me they put it as specific tribes. So it's not, you know, I mean, I'm sure there is partly where it's just kind of a hodgepodge of African things, but still trying to make it be very specific of not, we just take anything that even sort of resembles African-y, but to make it be like, this is a real place. It mm-hmm. has a real culture and a real history behind it, and wanting that to seem real.
Yeah, it was a little weird for me during that scene where he is being, he's about to be made king of Wakanda, and all of the tribes are there, and so they're showing the different tribes, and I like your perspective on it, because for me it felt like they did kind of just take mm-hmm. oh, look, here is every kind of typical African look that you can mm-hmm. have, and they chucked it into the scene. But it was to the specific tribes, so I do appreciate that there was thought behind that, and you did see that once they started acknowledging the tribes and you saw that it was the different tribes. When they first just showed everybody on the cliffs, I was like, whoa, let's just throw every African culture so into this.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they did try to do some exposition on that. So,
yeah. And the story, I think, I think if anything, the story maybe was a little troublesome for me. And not that it's a bad story or badly written, mm-hmm. but just without going into spoilers, the whole thing about Michael B. Jordan's character mm-hmm. and how that all came to be. And we don't really quite get into the reasons why that came to be. And then there is this whole thing where he's kind of able to talk to his ancestors mm-hmm. through something. And that's not really a spoiler because they spoofed that on Saturday Night Live. but that whole thing also with the ability to talk to the ancestors, I just felt like, you know, when you stop and think about that, you could have actually done a whole lot with that regarding this problem that comes up with Michael B. Jordan's mm-hmm. character.
That did feel a little brief.
But we don't
brief.
Really use that. And the whole thing with Michael B. Jordan's character was like, okay, we're all really, really accepting of this thing that a moment ago we didn't know was even possible. Let's just go with this. And okay, I guess we need to get to the final battle scene somehow. And
right.
just, and that's the one thing that was really interesting about this film was all the other superhero films felt, all the other Marvel superhero films, I should say, because I haven't seen the DC ones or half the Marvel ones, actually. But all of them felt very international. Mm-hmm. Very like, okay, yeah, this battle is taking place, you know, whatever, in New York, but it would really have this huge effect
right
wherever. And there is a whole set piece scene that happens in South Korea in this film, but beyond that, everything feels very much in Wakanda. And mm-hmm. part of that might be their whole isolationist thing that they've got going on. But even when we get to the final battle scene, I'm like, look, I get why we have to have this scene and stop the things that are about to happen. But even if you didn't, I'm not sure it would affect anyone outside Wakanda.
Right.
Like I know it would, but at the same time, it doesn't feel like it would. Mm-hmm. It feels like, and I know there is a different Marvel film called Civil War, but it feels like a civil war within Wakanda.
Right.
It's just very much,
it was.
The bad guys are also Wakandans. They're fighting themselves. Mm-hmm. So it's just like, huh.
Plus, they had armored war rhinoceri.
I love.
I'm just going to say that.
I mean, the battle scenes are very, and the way they managed to think of what would be weapons, like when Shuri and Lupita come out near the end of, you know, this is what your weapon looks like. Mm-hmm. Even if, you know, from the glances of it, I'm not quite sure how that weapon would work, but let's
right.
just go on that.
Well, and they had the sort of traditional, the one group of people with the wraps, and I can't think of what you would call them. I mean, they're kind of just, it's not a shawl, but that's the closest thing that I can think of. And they whip them around, and they turn out that they are also vibranium infused. And oh. so you get this kind of traditional African garb, but mm-hmm. it's really they create this huge wall, this shield with those, mm-hmm. Because they have the technology. So yes. they kind of worked all of that stuff in.
I mean, the vibranium is both a plus and a minus in that it allows them to do really cool things and have all this technology, but at the same time, it also just feels like an excuse of, oh, we're not going to explain it, it's vibranium.
Right, yes. And, you know, there's one character who suffers a spinal cord injury, and they just pop some vibranium in and he's
right.
fine.
Yeah,
it's more complicated than that.
It is, but yeah, I saw that too, and I was like, sure, okay, whatever. All right. But I mean, so it sounds like you were iffy on this film?
I enjoyed it. I didn't love it as much as everyone that I've talked mm-hmm. to going into it loved it.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things when something gets so hyped,
right?
You know, maybe mm-hmm. your expectations just get too big.
Right.
And so it did get better. The beginning was a little slow for me.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Yes.
And then it did get better. And then when all the kick-ass women came in, then I
yes.
loved that.
Yes.
So
I really, really, really liked this film, but I am also now nervous going forward with the next Avengers film. And, you know, they've already pretty much guaranteed there's going to be a sequel for this. I'm like, I'm already worried.
Yeah.
I feel you're going to mess it up. Please don't mess it up, because this was a really, really, really good start. So, yeah, I really thought this film was great. So we're going to take a quick break. And when we get back, we will be discussing Murder on the Orient Express. Stay tuned. You're listening to the GSMC Movie Podcast.
Want to know the latest and hottest music hidden the airwaves? Don't be left out. Listen to the Golden State Media Concepts Music Podcast. Jordan and Keith keeps you on the loop with everything you need to know.
Jordan
and Keith.
From pop, rock, hip-hop, and the top 40. And we'll throw in news of your favorite artists, concert and tour dates, and so much more. Listen no further, because this is the Gold Standard in Music Podcast.
Welcome back to the GSMC Movie Podcast. Earlier we discussed Black Panther, and now we are moving on to Murder on the Orient Express. And this being a mystery will be a bit hard to discuss without giving spoilers, but we will try our best.
Right.
Murder on the Orient Express is based off of the famous Agatha Christie novel. Have you read Agatha Christie?
Some. I have not read Murder on the Orient Express. I've read some of her others. She's a little hard for me to read, actually. Yeah. As much as I love books, she's always been a little difficult for me.
I had a hard time with this movie, so
yeah, I did too.
I haven't read any of Agatha Christie, and this is her famous serial detective Hercule Poirot. I don't speak French, so my accent there was terrible, I'm sure. But Agatha Christie has evidently admitted this, so it was clear that it came off. He's actually Belgian, but he speaks with, it sounds like a French accent.
Yeah.
He's like a French Belgian over affected Sherlock Holmes, which is quite interesting since Sherlock Holmes is already a little affected.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, I was like, I didn't know what it really was going into it, other than that it was a famous mystery,
mm-hmm,
and took place on this train, hence the title, and that was it.
Right.
So when we first get to Poirot, who's played by Kenneth Branagh, who also directed, I'm just like, what is this? We start with him being very, very particular about his eggs,
mm-hmm,
for some reason. And then him immediately going in and solving this mystery that's really just used to set up to show how cool of a detective he is.
Right.
And can, you know, figure things out from the smallest detail, very much like Sherlock Holmes. It's not the main mystery of the movie. We quickly move on. But this mystery of who stole the religious artifact or whatever,
mm-hmm,
in Jerusalem. And I'm just like, already I'm starting off with, he's got a very interesting mustache.
Mm-hmm. It's very impressive. It could have had its own credit.
Well, and it has its own mask at one point.
Yes.
He sleeps with this mask on to protect the mustache. And I'm just like, what the heck? But then he's solving this mystery, which, the way it was put up, I immediately also knew who it was,
mm-hmm,
by the way they described it. But it was just like, okay, yeah, I get you're supposed to be really smart and really intelligent, but you just seem overdone and,
mm-hmm,
obvious. And the way this is written does not set me up with a good feeling going into what the actual main mystery is.
They tried a little hard to really set that up, that he is this very detail-oriented,
right,
man, that he's very famous because he solves that mystery. He even so far as to know which direction the suspect is going,
right,
to run. And so he sets up something that will catch him. But then later we see other characters that, you know, they need him to come and solve this mystery. So you know that he's like this world,
right,
famous detective. And then he meets another character who's like, oh, I've read about you in the paper. They really try,
right,
hard to make you,
yeah,
know that he is famous. Thank you,
yes,
very much.
And he's, again, Belgium/French, sounds French. The accent is really hard to understand.
He speaks very fast.
Even when he speaks slow, I'm just like, what did you say? And I mean, maybe it's the mustache is getting in the way, but it was just like, I had a really, really hard time understanding Branagh half the time.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, part of the time, I got it. And it sounded fine. And maybe I just got used to it after. But then even later in the film, I was just like, what? What? I'm just going to watch and see if the action explains what the heck you just said.
I had high hopes for this movie because it has an incredible cast.
Yes.
I mean, we haven't talked about the cast.
Right.
You know, starring Kenneth Branagh, directed. It's got Johnny Depp, who has no accent.
Might he be has the, a, he oh, does. He does have an accent.
It's an accent without an accent, right?
You know, he's like, supposed to be a bad American, and he sounds like a stereotypical bad American.
Yeah, but I'm so used to him having, you know, he's crazy Irish, accent. He's French, he's this, he's
right.
That, right? Penelope Cruz is in it. Judy Dench, who I love, is in it. Michelle Pfeiffer.
Yes.
The cast is incredible. And so I was like, oh, yay.
Well, and it also has Daisy, I've forgotten her last name, who plays Rey in the new Star Wars. And I spent I didn't know that she was in this. And I spent the whole film looking at her going, I know you. What do I know you from? I know you. Couldn't figure it out. I had to look her up at the end. But she, I think, there's some acting that's good and some acting that's bad, and part of it may be the storyline, which being a mystery and the mystery being written in 1934 is almost ridiculously convoluted.
Like, yeah,
with what, when it's explained at the end, I'm just like, you're kidding.
Right. I mean, at least they did explain it in the end, because there was a point when I was like, really? These can't all be that many coincidences. And they weren't, thankfully. But so at least they made the coincidences make sense. But having not read the book, I don't know how true this story was to the book and if it was that complicated.
Well, I don't know about the story. I did look up because I knew that this story had been done before and that several different people have played Perrault throughout history of film and television.
Mm-hmm.
And that at least one character, the doctor's character, was actually a mishmash of two different characters the original. And that they maybe changed the circumstances of some people, but that it kind of stayed the same, mostly, save for the doctor, which I guess was the really big change. But I don't know about the story. But I thought it was sort of, I mean, there's a lot of characters. There's like 10 or 12 or so many people on this train.
Mm-hmm.
And we do, at the end, get the explanation. But I found it really hard when we were starting to figure out who's who and what's what. Because, I mean, it's very interesting the way we first get introduced to them as they all come to the train from different places and at different points. And there's one scene, I think, where he's walking through the train and I think Michelle Pfeiffer's character is following him, talking to him, where you see each of the characters sort of through the train windows in different locations.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was really cool. But then when we're later, when the murder happens already, and it's like at one point someone says, oh, you should talk to Marquez. And I'm like, who?
I know. Several people start talking about Marquez, and I was like, I'm not sure who Marquez is.
I don't know who that character is and what he has to do with Johnny. And you're with Johnny Depp, like, because they all show up differently and we don't, you know, say, oh, this is so-and-so and they'll be in car, whatever. Like,
right. Which would be a really bad movie making method,
right?
To just be like, and now we have.
But I mean, on the one hand, yeah, that would be a bad movie. But on the other hand, this movie is done in a strange way for me that I'm not sure it would have taken anything away from it, because it was already sort of weird. So it feels very stilted and overacted at times.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of that is from Branagh, who's very well known for his Shakespeare things, Much Ado and Hamlet and Henry V. And it's like, okay, yeah, you're really good at Shakespeare, but this is not Shakespeare. But it feels very much like people are trying to act as if it is Shakespeare. Mm. And it's just like the acting just felt, save for, I thought Penelope Cruz was just wonderful every time she was on. And that might be her character, because in the previous version, I think, I can't remember the actress, but she won an Oscar for that role.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, so I was just like, okay, just all the acting is just. And I find it's a mystery and people aren't who they say they are.
Right.
But still, even when you aren't who you say you are, shouldn't, to be believable, you have to be believable in the thing you even aren't. I'm not making any sense. But it was just, yeah, I just felt the acting was a little overdone and too hard and just something.
Yeah, and it's filmed on a train, of course, so that sort of limits some of the cinematography that you can do. And you had mentioned at one point that when they show the murder, they show it from as though you're on the ceiling of the compartment. And I get that there's space constraints in a train car.
Right.
But that was a little strange to see it from above, and somebody who has studied film maybe would have a better understanding of that I don't have.
Right. Yeah, I didn't understand that choice and why, because it's not like you ever see anything else shot that way again. Mm-hmm. I think when we come back to the body again, we see it from the top because we do see the stab wounds, whereas we don't the first time mm-hmm. we discover the murder. We just sort of, we stay outside the train, the car, as the people who discover the body go in and then come out and talk about it, because that's where you talk about murders, is in the hall. And then we go into the other compartment, but still all from the top. And it's just like, why are we looking down on all these people as they're, what? and actually, like, and I am going to imagine, I'm going to give Brianna the benefit of the doubt and say this maybe was in the original. There's actually a couple in here that kind of disappears for mm-hmm. half the film mm-hmm. and then shows up later, so that when they show up again, I was like, I completely forgot about you. And since we didn't actually get, you know, we never get a real introduction to anyone, I don't know who you are.
Yes.
I didn't even know you were on this train.
Yes.
What?
Well, then later in the film, there is a derailment of sorts. Right. And so they have to stop and wait to have things fixed. And mm-hmm. so when they're doing some of the revelations at the end with the mystery, they're all sitting at a table in this tunnel, which is a little strange.
Yeah.
Like, A, where'd the table come from? I don't know. Just there was some strange elements. And now I'm going to have to go read Agatha Christie.
Well, and I thought, and I hope at least, that he was trying to say something with that scene. Because when you first see them, all the characters at the table in this tunnel, some are sitting and some are standing. So it made me think of the painting of The Last Supper by mm-hmm. Da Vinci.
Yep.
And I was like, cool, except then once the mystery is revealed, I really don't understand what that would have to do with this, because I don't know that that main person is like Jesus, and I'm confused all over again. What were you trying to do? But you also did have this thing about, you know, oh, the train's derailed, so to put the train out, they have to get off the train. And they're even told at one point, you all have to get off the train because it's not safe as we try and put the train back on the tracks. But then Perrault decides to have this sort of confrontation with the character on the train as they're doing this.
Right. And my other question was, were these the only passengers on the train?
Right.
How short is this train? I mean, like, is it just a very limited space train?
Like, it's a very luxurious train, and so we cannot have more than half a dozen people. And or it's 1934, and so really most trains wouldn't have... I imagine most trains actually would have had more than half a dozen people, even in 1934.
Right, but, right.
Yeah, I thought that too. I was like, wait, you only have the one conductor? And you only have the one, like, staff person? And there's actually one point where they're talking and someone's playing piano, but you can't really see their face. And I'm like, is that a staff member? We finally get to see a staff member? Who is that? And then we don't really show their face, and I have no idea who that was.
Well, there have to be other people, because somebody was cooking the food. And right? Someone was presumably cleaning. And
driving the train.
Yes, exactly.
But yeah.
It's very strange. I mean, there were moments that I sort of liked toward the, as they were kind of starting to wrap things up, but mm-hmm. overall I was just like, eh.
And I wonder if that's not just sort of a trait of mysteries of the era, because mm-hmm. when it's all said and done and explained what this mystery is and how this mystery came to be, it's so over the top, ridiculous, interwoven that I'm just like, yeah, okay, we wanted to, you know, make people go, oh, at the end, like, oh, I never would have saw that, but this is a little ridiculous by today's standards that I can't. And at the end, Perrault gets off the train, and someone, again, because he's world famous as a detective, you know, comes up, oh, I'm looking for Perrault, I need to find Perrault, and he's like, oh, it's me, and he asks about some case that I think we've been somewhat referring to, but it doesn't mm-hmm. show up in the movie, so it doesn't really matter. And they're like, oh, no, sir, there was a death on the Nile. And I'm just like, oh. Because I know that's another title. I'm like, are you really so boldly setting up for a sequel right now?
Oh, sure.
Really?
Now, one thing that... So, Perrault, throughout the film, he just wants a vacation.
He really does.
So I can understand that. But the way the man giggles at reading Charles Dickens pretty much sums up a lot of his character, because Dickens is not funny.
He's really not. No. Dickens is very weak and
he's
sad.
Giggling. He's like, oh, Mr. Dickens. And I was like, well, okay, also, this explains some stuff.
I mean, and I think that was just another thing is Perrault is in the car next to the murder car when mm-hmm. the murder happens, but doesn't hear it. This great detective who notices everything doesn't hear this murder happen. I'm just like, you're a strange, idiosyncratic man. I don't know what to do with you.
It's a very quiet murder, maybe. I don't know.
I mean, we know, by the way, it's explained, couldn't have been that quiet.
Right, right. But if you hear a lawnmower in the background, you're not going crazy. That is a lawnmower in the background.
Maybe that's why he couldn't hear it, because of the lawnmower. On that note, we're going to end for today. Thank you for listening. You've been listening to the GSMC Movie Podcast. Tune in again when we will be talking about more films.
In the meantime, you can find all of our podcasts, all of the GSMC podcasts, at www.gsmcpodcast.com. You can follow us on social media. We're on Facebook and Twitter, GSMC Movie, and you can download our podcasts on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, Google Play, anywhere that you listen to podcasts. You can find the GSMC family of podcasts. Just type GSMC into the search bar and we'll come up. Thank you so much for joining us. Have a wonderful week.